Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Gunslinger, Killer's Train, by A.W. Hart. Narrated by Chris Abernathy. Chapter 1. Amarillo. Late on a hot, dry September afternoon, three weary riders topped a ridge covered with Apache plume and Spanish bayonet and looked down on Amarillo, a burgeoning cow town built around a grain elevator and several corrals. Cattle stood immobile in the heat. Telegraph wires marched toward the horizon from a two-story building, a mercantile with porches on both floors. High scudding clouds in the west promised rain. The three travelers wore wide-brimmed hats to shield their faces from the sun and led two pack mules.
"Well, there it is," said River Hicks, the oldest of the three, his lean face tanned from the sun, mustache covering his lip. A Colt single-action army pistol hung from his left hip. The stock of a Winchester 73 jutted from the right side of his saddle.
"Don't look like much," Connor Mack said. Though still a teenager, he had a stevedore's build and a mountain man's beard.
His sister Abby, the same age but the female opposite, tugged on her sweat-stained hat.
"I do hope they have some decent provender. I am so tired of hard tack and beans."
They were 3 days out of Lubbock. They would have stayed longer, but Hicks saw a man he'd known, and it was time to move on. They were headed toward Colorado, where the Rocky Mountain Railroad was hiring regulators. The discovery of gold in the Rockies had attracted not only thousands of miners, but hundreds of human buzzards looking to cash in. Outlaws had discovered that most trains were easy pickings. The trio rode down the dusty main street, acutely aware that they were the subjects of speculation. The merchant outside his dry goods store wondered what he could sell them. The whores, peering down from the second floor of the Grant Hotel, looked forward to their business. Owl Hoots looked for opportunity. The two men exuded laconic confidence, and the smaller one between them didn't look concerned. They passed 9 saloons until they came to Barton's Livery, a ramshackle barn-like structure that had been painted red. Sand had blasted most of the paint away. Corrals extended to the north and west, holding a dozen horses. As they stopped in front of the barn, a fat man wearing worn Levi's came out, thumbs hooked in his canvas suspenders.
"Are you looking for board?"
Hicks dismounted, took off his hat, and wiped his forehead on his sleeve.
"They need a good rub down. Don't know how long we'll be staying."
"It's $3 a day per animal. Might be a while before I get to them because the gentleman I had helping me run off with Chester Dietrich's Appaloosa. I have the Rangers out looking for him, and he'll be lucky if they don't pump him full of holes. I just hope they don't shoot the horse. Dietrich's offering $500 for the horse back, no questions asked."
"Well, you looking to hire?" Hicks said.
The stablemaster looked them over.
"Maybe."
Hicks gestured toward Connor.
"This boy's a good worker and knows horses."
"Come down here, son," the stablemaster said. "I'm Jed Barton."
Connor dismounted.
"Yes, sir. I know horses."
"What's your name, son?"
"Connor Miller."
They shook.
"Well, I'll tell you what. You look worn out. Why don't you take some time to wet your whistle, maybe get a bath? Come back here in the morning and I'll put you to work. You give me 12 solid hours to take care of all these horses, I won't charge you for yours, so long as you're on the job."
Connor looked at Hicks, who gave an imperceptible nod.
"We'll do that. Any of these saloons better than the rest?"
"Well, the Grant's the classiest. They have real whiskey, and they're adjacent to the hotel. Connor, you can sleep in the stable if you like. Might save you a couple dollars."
Connor unleashed his bedroll, tossed it on a wooden bench, and uncinched his saddle. Hicks and Abby did the same, lining them up against the wall inside the entrance. The three hung their saddlebags over their shoulders. Abby's hair was cut short and stuffed under her hat. She'd chosen her clothes to disguise the fact that she was a girl. She did not need much disguising. Only a teenager,
She had just begun to mature into the woman she would become. "See you in the morning," Connor said. "Don't be late. You get drunk, get into a fight, show up late, you can forget that job." "I won't." The three walked up the street, sometimes on boards set in the dirt for the rainy season, but mostly in the dust. Dust hung in the air. Two buggies going in opposite directions passed them, as well as a half dozen horsemen and a mule-drawn wagon. Two horses were tied to the hitch rack out front of a raised storefront advertising dry goods. An exhausted-looking old man sat on a bench. As the trio crossed the road to the Grant, a horseman in a big brown gelding raced toward them, riding like the devil, whipping his foaming horse on its flanks with a crop stick. He wore a black shirt, leather vest, and a black hat ringed with silver concus. "Look out, you damned dirt farmer!" he yelled. If Connor hadn't grabbed Abby by the arm and yanked her out of the way, she would have been struck. "Come back here, you son of a bitch!" Connor yelled, but the horseman was out of hearing. They'd only had a glimpse of him, a young man with a hawk nose and a mustache. Hicks looked up at three cowboys sitting on the wooden bench on the raised deck in front of the Grant Hotel and Saloon. "Who was that? Anybody know?" "Mister," said an old man slouched against the wall, "that there's Rance Weldon. His old man's Sheriff Weldon. Ain't nothing you can do about it. Ain't nothing anyone can do about it." The cowboy next to him spat into the street. Connor, Abby, and Hicks climbed two steps onto the deck. There were two entrances, one for the saloon, the other for the hotel. The saloon entrance had bat wings. The hotel entrance was a proper door. As Abby headed for the saloon, Hicks put a hand on her arm. When she turned around quizzically, he put a finger to his lips. "Follow me," he said, going into the hotel. The lobby was surprisingly clean, the hardwood floor covered in Navajo rugs, three cowhide chairs against the wall. A low wood rail separated the lobby from the restaurant on the right. There were four tables, one occupied by an old-timer, his jacket draped over the back of his chair, slurping something out of his bowl. A crow-like woman sat behind the counter reading a Bible. Just inside the entrance, Hicks turned and spoke in a low voice. "Better lay low, Abby. You're not one for drinking anyway."
"I want to see."
"I know you want to see, but you don't even know how tired you are. You're going to check into a room and take a bath. I'll have them bring you a bucket and some clothes. Better no one knows you're a girl. Don't talk to anyone. Just take a bath and go to bed, and don't tell me you're not sleepy. You nearly fell out of your saddle twice today." She glared for an instant, but it faded into weariness.
"I wouldn't mind a bath and some sleep."
"You stay here."
The woman put down her Bible and stood behind the counter.
"Would you like a room?"
Hicks spoke with her, signed the register, exchanged money for two keys, and returned. He handed one key to Abby.
"We have two connected rooms. Abby, you take the one to the north. Connor and I are going to do a little exploring. Connor and I'll bunk together."
"I thought I was going to sleep in the stable."
"You just show up there in the morning."
Chapter 2. Sarsaparilla. It was 6 when Hicks and Connor entered the saloon through a connecting door, and the sun was still high in the west. A black man in a white shirt with sleeve garters and a black derby sat at an upright piano, pounding out crazy music the likes of which Connor had never heard. He had never before thought about dancing, but darned if he didn't feel his feet moving. It was some kind of magic. He got no further than the pianist, while Hicks worked his way sideways through the cowpokes, whores, and shopkeepers who crowded the big room. Three soiled doves lounged against the wood banister looking down from a second-floor balcony, with three doors visible and a corridor extending rearward on the end. A lamp made from a wagon wheel hung from chains from the beam ceiling, light from a dozen candles reflecting off the liquor bottles behind the bar. All 12 stools were taken. It had a brass rail and brass spittoons at either end. A half dozen hard cases gave Hicks the once-over through the mirror behind the bottles.
An older cowboy with a red bandana around his neck sat at a table with a rangy gal whose heavy makeup couldn't conceal her years, wearing a frilly blue dress with a scooped neck. They leaned toward one another, her hand finding its way to his lap. They stood and headed toward the stairs. Hicks swooped in and grabbed the table, eyeing a shot glass that still held a half finger. The pianist finished the song with a plunk, looked up, and winked.
"Mister," Connor said, "I ain't never heard nothing like that. What you call that?"
"What, this?" He played a crazy snatch of tune that made Connor's pulse quicken. "That's hoochie-coochie music, Mister Man. That's the real deal. I made it up myself."
"Where are you from?" Connor said.
"New Orleans. You?"
"Oh, you ain't ever heard of it. Just a hole in the ground. I'm Connor."
The pianist stuck out his hand.
"Harley Withers."
Withers had a full, round face and bulging eyes for merriment. A glass tumbler on top held a wad of bills and coins. Connor pulled out his cloth wallet, bulging with money they still had from the bounty hunters who'd tried to kill them, peeled off a dollar bill, and put it in the glass.
"Thank you kindly. I take requests. What you want to hear?" "I ain't never heard music before. It all sounds good to me."
Withers did a double take.
"You never heard music before? Not even church music?" "No, sir. My pa weren't much for church going. My ma used to take us when we were little, but there weren't no singing. Fact is, up until just a little while ago, I never left the farm."
"What caused you to move on?"
"My partner figures we can find work in Colorado."
"What's in Colorado?"
"Gold."
Withers tilted his head back and guffawed.
"You're about 20 years late, son. They picked clean everything worth picking." "My partner says there's always opportunities with men who know how to use a gun."
Withers looked at him more carefully.
"You know how to use a gun?"
Connor shrugged. He figured he'd already said too much.
"Right now, I'm working down at Barton's livery. I know how to tend horses."
"You look like some of them Mormon fellows we see from time to time." Connor felt his beard and blushed. He'd been meaning to shave, just as soon as Hicks taught him how. They'd been on the road ever since he showed up 5 minutes ahead of the bounty hunters. A woman screamed, glass broke, and two men lunged into a table, knocking it over and falling to the floor where they rolled in the sawdust, biting and pounding on one another. Other patrons cleared a space, laughed, and drank up. A boy with an Adam's apple the size of a baseball looked out the front door.
"Sheriff's coming!"
he yelled, voice cracking. A rangy man in a 10-gallon hat, star on his chest, Colt on his belt, stormed through the door, went right up to the brawling cowboys, and savagely began kicking them. He walked with a peculiar hitching gait.
"Get up, you worthless sumbitches! Get up!"
The fighters broke apart and looked up. They hurriedly scrambled to their feet. The sheriff laid his pistol against first one, then the other. They went back down. He reached down, relieved them of their sidearms and wallets.
"Now, Otto," he said to the bartender, "what you reckon these trash done broke?"
The bartender came out from behind the bar, looked at the broken glasses and spilled whiskey.
$20 saw to cover it.
The sheriff peeled a 10 from each man's wallet and tossed the wallets on the floor.
"You got a half hour to get your shit and get the hell out of this town."
"But, Sheriff,"
one protested,
"he started it. Why do I have to pay?"
"Maybe I just don't like your face. Now get the hell out of here before I lock you up."
The two men scrambled to their feet and fled into the evening. The sun had lowered, casting long shadows on the front of the building. Connor watched from the piano in the corner.
"Do all sheriffs do that?" he said softly.
Withers shook his head. "Not all. Sheriff Weldon came from Phoenix. Before that, his past's a little sketchy. He does put a damper on the more enthusiastic revelers. Best not to cross him. Why don't you get me a glass of whiskey, and yourself a sarsaparilla?"
He reached up and pulled a dollar from his glass.
"Yes, sir,"
Connor said, heading for the bar. He sidled up next to a Mexican girl with tumbling black hair and a colorful skirt. She put her hand on his arm.
"Hello there, cowboy. Are you looking for some company?"
Connor swallowed, blushing.
No, ma'am. Just getting a couple drinks.
She gave him a look.
When you feel you're ready, ask for me. My name is Esmeralda.
I'll be sure to do that, ma'am.
Connor watched Hicks talking to a man seated at the next table. He looked around. A stuffed mountain lion was mounted over the bar. A stuffed armadillo crouched at the end of the line of bottles. Another bartender, a skinny guy with patent black hair, worked the far end. The bartender came over.
You buying that nigger a drink?
No, sir. He's buying me one. One sarsaparilla and one whiskey.
Well, that's a first.
He poured Withers a drink in a glass tumbler and filled another with a foaming brown drink from a barrel below the bar.
We ain't got no ice. Won't have none for a couple months yet.
He made change.
That's fine. Thank you, sir.
On his way back to the piano, Hicks caught his eye and motioned him over. Chapter 3 Scuttlebutt. Withers toasted Connor, tossed it down, and broke into hoochie-coochie music that made Connor want to dance.
I got to go. My friend is calling me over.
Nice meeting you, Mr. Miller.
Connor weaved among the tightly packed tables to where Hicks sat in the corner, his back to the wall. Connor set his glass on the table and sat down. Hicks picked it up, sniffed, took a sip.
Sarsaparilla, he declared.
I never had this before. Never knew something could taste so good.
Your old man and brothers, they drink?
Only my father. It was ugly. He darn near wrecked the house. Abby and me lit out for the Alameda for the night. Didn't dare come back till noon the next day. That hangover liked to kill him. After that, he wouldn't abide no liquor in the house. And the time he caught Caleb and Lucas with a bottle down by the creek, he laid into them with a branding iron. They couldn't work the next day.
Hicks held up his glass.
You want a taste? You're a man, far as I'm concerned.
Connor took the glass.
Well, I am a bit curious.
He sipped. His nose wrinkled and he shook his head.
Hey, you! Why would anybody drink this stuff?
Why, indeed.
What are we going to do, Mr. Hicks?
You can call me River, I told you. We're going to lay up here a couple days, then head on up to Colorado. The Rocky Mountain Railroad's hiring regulators. Seems they have all sorts of problems. A mountain lion killed two of their coolies. They got some renegades still up in the mountains. Haven't heard about the great peace we're supposed to be enjoying with Lo, the noble red man. There's rumors Patty Doyle's headed their way.
Who's Patty Doyle?
New York Mick been robbing banks. He's meaner than a rattlesnake with a toothache. 3 months ago, he robbed a train in Arizona and liked it. People say he's heading to Colorado because the narrow-gauge mountain routes are easy pickings. Out on the range, you have to chase that train down and jump aboard off a running horse. But up in the mountains, you just wait at one of those curves. Train comes around real slow. You just jump on board. Or you make yourself a blockade with a couple picks and a shovel, or a stick of dynamite. You got that train stuck, you can pretty much do with it what you want.
I ain't never seen no mountains.
Well, we're going to fix that. But first, we're going to hang around here for a few days for the horses to rest up. You go on back to the hotel from here. I'll be by and by.
What you going to do, Mr. Hicks?
I might talk to one of these ladies.
You see that business with the sheriff?
Hard to miss.
It was his boy nearly ran down Abby.
Someone ought to teach that boy some manners.
If I see him again, I might do it.
No, you won't. We're trying to get where we're going without attracting attention.
I just don't see how they can make that man sheriff and put up with this shit.
Unfortunately, this isn't uncommon in these cow towns. The business leaders make a deal with some hard case with a gun to look after their interests. Then they tell people they got law and order. Half these sheriffs are outlaws themselves. That's just the way it is. The strong take over and prey on the weak. You can bet Junior doesn't have to pay for his drinks.
Connor felt bone weary.
If you don't mind, I'm going to head back to the hotel and catch some shut-eye.
I wish you would. Well, good night, Mr. Hicks. I'll try not to wake you up, and you can call me River.
Rather than cut through the scrum that stood between him and the hotel lobby, Connor went outside. It was night, but the street was well lit from gas lamps in the 9 taverns, including the Grant. Light spilled from windows, doors, and a pale half-moon. They called it a calf's moon, and some breeders swore by it. Cowboys lounged on benches, smoking hand-rolled cheroots, pungent scent mixing with that of horse manure. There were horses and wagons outside every tavern. Horses whinnied, cattle lowed, and coyote yipped. The muted susurrus of conversation drifted on the breeze. Connor went down the alley adjacent to the saloon, located the piss trench by smell, and relieved himself before circling back to the front of the hotel clockwise. Inside, the desk clerk napped on a velvet-covered settee against the wall, the Bible upside down on her lap. Connor stepped as quietly as he could past her and went up the sets of stairs to the right, the key in his hand, attached to a brass fob that read 10. Abby was in 11. He wanted to know how she was doing, but he didn't want to wake her. He let himself quietly into his room and lit the oil lamp on the wood table, delighted to find a big clay bowl filled with water and 2 clean towels. While he was washing his face, the interior door connecting the 2 rooms opened inward, and a fresh-faced Abby appeared wearing a baggy man's union suit, blinking.
"I hope I didn't wake you up. I heard you come in. Well, just go on back to sleep now. I got nothing to report, except we're heading to Colorado in a few days."
"I have a job," Abby said.
"What?"
"Yes, Mrs. McElroy needs a dishwasher. I told her I'd give it a couple days. She will pay me $5 a day."
"Mr. Hicks told you not to show yourself."
"She thinks I'm a boy. She doesn't see very well. Cataracts."
Abby comically lowered her voice.
"Plus, I lowered my voice."
"Why'd you do that?" "We need the money, don't we? These owl hoot wages won't last forever. I'm certainly not too proud to work."
"Go back to bed, Abby."
She returned to her room and softly closed the door. Connor stripped off his shirt and pants, threw them in a heap, collapsed on one of 2 monastic beds, and was asleep within minutes. Chapter 4. Hercules. Connor was at the stables at 5 and went to work feeding the horses. 2 hours later, he dumped the last of the manure into an old wagon out back. Wiping the sweat from his eyes with a bandana, he turned to find Barton watching him from the shade of the barn.
"You remind me of Hercules," the old man said.
"Who?"
"Come here, son. Take a drink of water. You don't know Hercules? He was an ancient Greek. The goddess Hera drove him mad, and he killed his own wife and children. When he woke and saw what he'd done, he wanted to kill himself, but he didn't. He prayed to Apollo for guidance, and Apollo told him he had to serve Eurystheus, king of Mycenae, for 12 years to make atonement. As part of his sentence, Hercules had to perform 12 near-impossible feats, one of which was to clean out the Augean stables. They hadn't been cleaned in 300 years. That's why you remind me of Hercules."
"I don't know nothing about that, sir."
"I can see that. You had any schooling?"
"My ma taught me to read and write before she died, but I ain't done much reading."
"Hang on. Take a weight off, have a drink, and wait right here. I'll be right back."
Connor helped himself to a drink from the covered rain barrel and slid down in the shade with his back against the barn. He was sore all over from the riding and the morning's labor, and he had yet to check the horses for cuts, lesions, and hooves. Barton returned a few minutes later with a wicker basket, which he set next to Connor. "There's some beef jerky and a couple apples in case you haven't had breakfast, and that book's for you." Connor picked up a well-worn gray book, Bullfinch's Mythology. He thumbed through it, intimidated by the close-set words, but marveling at the illustrations. Fantastic creatures. A winged horse, a 3-headed dog, a bearded god wearing a toga hurling lightning bolts at the earth. It gave off a musty smell. That'll tell you about the Greek gods. I didn't even know there were any Greek gods. Only god I know about is the one they talk about in church.
You a churchgoer?
No, sir. After Ma died, we didn't hardly go to church. I only went a few times when I was a kid.
Barton snorted. You're still a kid. But you're a good kid. You take that book and you read it. Learn a thing or two.
I wish I had two more like you. Most of the help I get around here are saddle bums who would just as soon rob me blind as do an honest day's work.
Where'd you say you were headed?
I could make you an offer. You stick with me, work hard. You could own a piece of this.
Don't you have any kids?
Not anymore.
What happened to them, Mr. Barton?
The girl ran off with a snake oil salesman. The boy died fighting for the Confederacy.
You have a wife?
My first wife died of the typhus. Now I have a pretty good Indian squaw. She doesn't speak much English, and I don't speak much Comanche, but we get along.
Hey!
A man called from the front. Barton headed for the barn. First customer of the day. Connor leafed through the book in awe. He'd never seen such pictures. He had no idea how they were made or what they depicted. He could make out a few words beneath them, sounding them out phonetically as he'd been taught. He placed the book carefully on a toolbox in the shade and started checking the horses stall by stall. Barton called out from the front,
"Connor, Hathaway wants his horses. Stall 2 and 3.
Connor brought out Hathaway's big bay, followed by a pinto he used for a pack horse. Hathaway was a middle-aged man of average build, wearing a flat-brimmed vaquero hat. He carefully examined each horse, starting with their eyes and going back to their withers. When he was satisfied, he pulled out his leather wallet.
"They look fit. What do I owe you?"
"25 ought to cover it."
Hathaway carefully counted out the money, threw an Indian blanket on the bay's back, followed by a saddle. He threw a blanket over the pinto and tied 2 rolls and 2 sets of saddlebags to its back before grabbing the apple and hoisting himself on top. Connor and Barton watched him saunter south through town. By the time Connor had finished examining the 14 horses, it was past noon.
"Take a break,"
Barton said from his office, a small room made from a stable.
"Make sure you keep drinking water. Gonna be hotter than Hades out here. You read that book, you'll learn about Hades."
Connor was out front, pouring a tin of water over his head when he heard a horse approach.
"Boy! You give Pegasus a good rub down. I'll be back in an hour, and if she ain't shiny as a new penny, I'm going to lay into you with a whip."
Connor looked up, momentarily confused by the young man's tone. He froze. It was the hellion from yesterday who nearly knocked down Abby, the sheriff's son.
"You, boy, I'm talking to you."
Connor gave him a look that would freeze a rattlesnake. The man looked back. An instant of shock, a pinprick of fear, before his arrogance took over.
"What are you looking at, you no-good prairie trash? You keep looking at me like that, I'm gonna whip you. Barton, get out here!"
Barton emerged, wearing an accountant's shade.
"Good day to you, young Weldon. What seems to be the problem?"
Weldon gestured at Connor.
"This here prairie trash is giving me the stink eye. He don't belong here. You give him a job. I don't want to do business with no one gives such trash a job."
"What did he do?"
"He gave me the stink eye."
Barton turned to Connor.
"What happened?"
Connor hung his head.
"Nothing, Mr. Barton. I don't know what the gentleman's talking about."
"Well, now, young Weldon, if you want to take your business elsewhere, there's the Mexican down on the other end of the street. This here boy's a good worker, and I have no reason to fire him."
Weldon stared from one at the other, then leaped off his horse.
"You know I don't trust no Mexican." "All right, Barton, you still got my business. But if this sheep puncher shows me any disrespect, I might have reason to teach him a lesson."
"There won't be a problem, young Weldon."
Weldon turned and strode toward the center of town.
"What did you say to him?" Barton said.
"Nothing. Yesterday he almost ran down a friend of mine in the street, riding crazy through the center of town."
"Nothing to be done about it as long as his old man's sheriff.
Just stay out of his way.
What's his name?
Sample complete. Ready to continue?